Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
I'm ready to record these promos. Go ahead, Nima.
Sure. Stick around after the Freedom Fiends for World Crisis Radio on Hot Talk AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow.
Good.
All right. Number two. Stick around after the Freedom Fiends for Flow of Wisdom on Hot Talk AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow. And you're listening to the best of Dennis Miller.
Hang on. Do the KSZL in Barstow again. You paused a little too much between them. Just go KSZL in Barstow.
KSZL in Barstow.
All right. Now do Dennis Miller.
You're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. Stick around for the Freedom Fiends up next on Hot Talk AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow.
Good.
All right. Now, this is Nima Vedati, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow.
Good. Now I'll do mine. This is Michael Dean, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow. That's one. Oh, you're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. You're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. Stick around. You're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. Stick around for the Freedom Fiends. I'm sounding snotty. You're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. Stick around for the Freedom Fiends up next on Hot Talk AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow. How's that?
One more time for safety.
All right. On both or just the second one?
Just the second one.
You're listening to the best of Dennis Miller. Stick around for the Freedom Fiends up next on Hot Talk AM 1230 KSZL in Barstow. KSZL in Barstow. Yeah, I got it.
All right.
You got it. Yeah, good. Yeah. Oh, in case I'm gonna leave that on the cast. In case anyone doesn't know, we're starting on the radio in 2 weekends from now on KSZL in Barstow, and we're very excited about it.
Yes, you are really excited about it. You say it's always been a dream of yours to be on the radio in Barstow. Is that right?
Yeah, we'll get to more of that later, but okay. we have things to discuss.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Like what?
This. I'm so hooked on this show, and you have seen a bunch of it,
yeah,
and you don't want to admit it, but so we can discuss it. It's something we've both seen, man. We're always like, I don't know what that is. So,
yeah,
I actually went and checked it out because I heard Mark. I guess I'd seen it in passing and been kind of like, it's a sitcom where the people all live together in the same apartment. I've seen that a million times, but I heard Mark Edge describe Ian on the air on Free Talk Live as a Sheldon Cooper. It was kind of funny. I was like, what is Sheldon Cooper? And I looked it up because somebody was saying like, well, we shouldn't be going to war over in Syria. We don't want to do that. And Ian said, who's we? And the guy's like, us, United States. And Ian said, what do you mean we? And he kept saying, what do you mean we? Who is we? And Mark said, unless you say the United States instead of we, Ian's just going to continue in a Sheldon Cooper infinite loop. And I thought that was really funny. And then I looked it up and I was like, yeah, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a guilty pleasure for me. I was the same as you. When I first saw it or encountered it, I was like, ugh, this is lame. But my wife really got into it, and so we ended up watching it episode after episode when we were flying to Hawaii last year. And I must admit, there's more merit to it than I gave it credit for, and it is a funny show. It's a good way to kill 22 minutes if you have 22 minutes to kill.
Yeah, it requires some suspension of statism, and I want to talk about the libertarian and non-libertarian aspects of it. First of all, the opening song by the Bare Naked Ladies. The Bare Naked Ladies. It's a catchy tune, but...
We built the wall. We built the pyramids.
We built the pyramids. And I'm like, who? You and the Jewish slaves and Chinese slaves in your pocket? I mean... Of all the things to collectivize, like, first of all, it happened thousands of years before you're born. Second of all, it's not your country. So I guess it's your species, but it's like, is that a thing to marvel about? I guess from an engineering standpoint, but the wall and the pyramids were built by thousands of slaves who were killed when they didn't work hard enough and probably killed anyway when they were done and just buried in the desert. And
that's why the ends does not justify the means, even if it is a pyramid.
I know. So that's problem one. Problem two is, I mean, yeah, it's a bunch of quirky, fun, genius young dudes that are kind of cool to hang out with and they're your imaginary friends, but their day jobs, they're all like scientists for the military industrial complex.
They are, yeah.
Period.
Yeah, one is building $1 million toilets for
NASA.
The one who doesn't have a
doctorate is actually building something. The rest of them are all theorizing for, you know, the NSA. Well, they work for the university, but like, Sheldon Cooper invents his own board game, and it's like research scientist, fun for ages 8 to 80, and one of the goals in it is to get the card that says, get another government grant.
I don't remember that, but yeah, that sounds about right. Although there is one episode where the plot is they're trying to get funds from a fundraiser, you know, from their well-off donors. And so the one who used to be in Roseanne, what's his name?
There's a lot of connection. Galecki is his last name.
But the character's name, Leonard. So Leonard basically has to prostitute himself out to the
to the lady who plays
the mom in Arrested Development in order to get the grant money.
Yes. You know, there is some brilliant casting in this. One of the brilliant casting moments is that the weird, quirky science nerd girl that Leonard dates at one point is the girl that played his sister on Roseanne.
No, his girlfriend.
Oh, was it? Okay, I never really watched much Roseanne.
Darlene.
Okay, yeah. I thought that was his sister.
He was like the live-in loser boyfriend that fell on hard times and moved in with Roseanne and I guess slept with Darlene in her room in her parents' house while they were living
in Sin. The guy
that
played Leonard wasn't...
He was the boyfriend of Roseanne's daughter. Yeah.
Well, you know that...
Which makes it even a better casting choice because in yet another sitcom world, they get to bump ugly. So maybe it's like a parallel universe kind of a thing.
Maybe it's in his contract. Maybe it's multiverse. It's in his contract. Although he actually dated... The actor that plays him dated the actor that plays Penny while this show was being made.
But
the guy who created the two guys that created this worked together on Roseanne, and there's a couple other like the woman that plays Roseanne's sister. She's on in one.
Oh, she's Sheldon's mom, isn't she?
Oh yeah. Yep, yeah, that's right. She is. That's right.
I'm pretty sure she's Sheldon's mom. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I get all their moms mixed up.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Yeah, and the guy that plays Sheldon, the weird, hyper-genius, asexual guy who doesn't know how to relate with people, who I actually relate with a lot, and I'm going to go through the list of that. He's the one I most – I mean, I'm probably most like Leonard, but there's a lot of things Sheldon does that I like. He's good with a gun because he grew up in Texas. He said his daddy taught him to shoot so close to a raccoon you can make it pee. He loves cats. He has – at one point he gets 24 cats, I think. He loves that song his mother sang him, which goes soft kitty, warm kitty, little ball of fur, happy kitty, sleepy kitty, purr, purr, purr. And that's the whole song. It's an actual children's song. I love it. And that comes up a lot in it. He hates Christmas. He thinks it's completely useless. He doesn't like gift giving in any scenario where anything's expected in return. He thinks it's bad math because, you know, you don't get the person what you want. You should just give them $50, but then they have to give you $50. And you do that to each other until you die of old age, one of you owing the other $50. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I guess theoretically you would buy yourself something you'd like more with the $50 than the other person. Yeah. If you look at it in that cold, calculated way, but for some people, you know, genuine gift giving can be a thought from the heart, you know, like, oh, this person knew me well enough to get this specific thing.
I like gift giving. I like giving you and your wife gifts. I've given you lots of gifts. I like
it when you give us gifts too.
You guys don't have as much money as we do, so I don't expect gifts back. Yeah, but it's like, I hate Christmas, you know? I hate the thought that, like, I have family members I barely talk to or are expecting something. I just send cards now. And I'm kind of weaning off of that.
Yeah, Christmas is tough, especially when you're broke.
Yeah.
especially when you have both me and my wife are from divorced homes. So it's kind of like that Stefan Molyneux thing of divorce is bad for the environment because it doubles the amount of resources you need. And so since we have two sets of divorced parents, it quadruples our Christmas gift buying.
Ugh. I don't know. Yeah. I would think that the social contract would dictate that after divorce, you don't have to give that side of the family anything.
Which side? Both sides?
Back to this wonderful show, Big Bang Theory. Some Stato problems I have with it are Sheldon, he talks about social contracts a lot. And like he says, well, gift giving, I've signed a social contract by receiving your gift.
Does he? I don't know if he calls it a contract. Doesn't he call it custom?
He does something use the like word that? Social contract with gift giving. He also talks about – he's kind of sociopathic because he believes that laws must be obeyed to the minutia. Like he basically says like, you know, at some point someone's driving and there's no cars around and he wants to take a right on red, which is illegal in a lot of places in California.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my. What?
And
okay.
Anyway, put a pin in that. And, you know, Leonard takes a right on red and like Sheldon freaks out. He's like, you can't just obey laws willy nilly whenever you feel like it. If that happened, pretty soon the social contract will dissolve and will descend into anarchy. I'm up to season 4 and like middle of season 4 and I've heard him say we'll descend into anarchy 4 times now. It's a fear of his. Here's the thing, though. I believe that if Sheldon Cooper were a real person and I could have 3 minutes with him, I could convert him to an anarchist because he's so logical that if you just used the thing of like, is it okay to hit other people? No. Well, how is it okay to, you know, just using that stepping stone thing, I think he would just go, okay, you're right. There shouldn't be government.
Explaining the non-aggression principle to Sheldon Cooper.
Yeah.
Maybe. But the thing about the character of Sheldon Cooper is he's so clueless when it comes to human-to-human interaction. He doesn't understand the nuances of it in any respect, and he vainly attempts to all the time. Like the hot beverage thing, every time somebody comes over or feels sad, his go-to, because he thinks it's the social norm, is to offer them a hot beverage. You know, would you like a hot beverage?
I know.
Not like, would you like some tea? Would you like some coffee? It's just, would you like a hot beverage? And it's not anything that he's trying to be empathetic. He's just memorized that by rote and so goes back to it.
And he also doesn't drink much. I mean, when he does, he gets even weirder and more insane. But I don't drink. He doesn't drink. He can shoot. I can shoot. He's got cats. I like cats. I don't like gifts. I don't like imposed, implied social contracts. He's much smarter than me, of course.
He doesn't like sex.
I know. That's
the big divergence.
I said to my wife, you know, if Stewie the baby on Family Guy grew up, he would be Sheldon Cooper. And she's like, except Stewie would have sex.
Yeah, lots and lots of gay sex.
Yeah. The actor that plays Sheldon is a gay man. He's not asexual like Sheldon. Oh, and he's from Texas. His character is, and he's from Texas. He's a founding member of the theater troupe from Houston called Infernal Bridegroom Productions, which one of my exes in Houston did a lot of stuff with. She did dance stuff at the same theater they were in, and she was in some of their productions.
Yeah. Cool. Small world, I guess.
I just got breaking news. I'm going to come back to Sheldon Cooper, but Shield Mutual, what's his name, George?
Oh, I saw that. George Donnelly.
Yeah, yep. Just sent out a press release. Adam Kokesh is no longer our customer. Shield Mutual is ending its relationship with Adam Kokesh for the following reasons. We do not normally
don't read it. It's way too
issue
long.
A statement for a routine matter, but this is a special case. Now, I am just bringing this up because I got into a beef with George Donnelly over this. Remember? And like, or like,
oh yeah,
we had a whole beef about it, and I we made fun of him, and it was like, okay.
Well, the number two reason I think he states there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I went over this while I was waiting for 45 minutes at the vape shop, so I read through George Donnelly's thing. I actually had the time to do that because I was a captive audience almost, and I think the second reason was pointing to the.
Stop. Fuck. Okay. I gotta stop here. Big Bang Theory, man. Screw breaking news. It breaks things. We had to stop and reboot things. And
we did.
It was, yeah. Good thing that wasn't radio. So, yeah, he's, here's the thing that's interesting about them is when most of the show exists in anarchy. You know how someone recently said, somebody said that most of what most people do is anarchy. There's no rules. They don't need a government around. They're just living their lives. That's how most of that show is.
Right. And who I think said that? I think that was Jeff Tucker who the quote's from.
Yeah.
I can't recall the direct quote, but yeah, basically it explains that any time that you do something where coercion isn't involved, anytime you do something that's voluntary, a transaction between you and somebody else where the government is not involved, that's anarchy, right? Because there's no government involvement.
Yeah.
And that's how life, or at least civil life, progresses, is on the is on those transactions that are anarchic in nature.
Yeah, and Sheldon believes in the state because he's been told it his whole life, but I think he could convince him otherwise with logic pretty quickly. And he also he believes he's above the law, which is probably because he's really smart, and smart people who are statists usually think they are. When his World of Warcraft account gets hacked, he calls the Pasadena police. They tell them they don't have jurisdiction in that world. And he says to the cop, well, can you refer me to a rogue cop who's been fired for taking it too far that I can hire to go get justice for me?
Well, here's why I think you're wrong.
And he tries to order uranium on eBay so he can mark cards while doing card trick, while proving card tricks.
Okay.
Wrong.
Okay. Here's why I think you're wrong about Sheldon Richmond. Sheldon Cooper, yeah, not Sheldon Richmond. He's an actual person. No, Sheldon Cooper, the fictional character. The only way you'd be right is because he is a fictional character, and if the plot of the show necessitated that he become an anarchist, then maybe you could convince him that he'd be an anarchist. But I think that people like Sheldon Cooper in real life are those experts in things that are wrong that you like to talk about. And I also think there's been studies done that show that people who have firmly held beliefs, even when they're presented with facts and logic to the contrary, it strengthens their original position. And the people who are actually smart, though they may be right and completely right about 90% of things, the 10% of things that they're wrong on, they'll stick to because they're so sure that they're smarter than the person giving them the new facts.
I don't know, though, man. Sheldon Cooper once tried to make his apartment a sovereign nation.
Is there any – can you point to any example in the show, though, where somebody else tries to convince Sheldon of a point and he actually gets it and takes that and folds it into his new worldview? I mean, I guess there's a few examples of that in like interpersonal relationships.
It's really painful to him when it does. And I haven't really seen it that I can think of and point to where it jumped out at me where it was a factual thing. It's more like when he's learning human interaction things. And he doesn't understand them, and they're explained to him.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, what makes characters interesting in media, in fiction, is their flaws, right? And that's one of Sheldon's flaws, is that he may be – he has this amazing brain and this amazing ability to think, but his flaw is his hubris and his disregard as lesser the things that he's not an expert in, like personal relationships.
Sheldon Richmond probably is an anarchist. He's the
Sheldon Richmond is, yes. Yeah, that's
he's the editor of the Freeman, and he was published by Fee, who we talked about recently, the Foundation for Economic Education.
We did, and I've quoted him, and we've brought up the phrase he coined about airbrushing barbarism as all those little words that they use in the state lexicon that are really horrible actions, but they airbrush them with things like that, like public policy, foreign policy, taxation, all of those little words that that cover up the fact that aggression is taking place with flowery, pseudoscientific language.
Does he write that? Like, he writes for some really mainstream publications. Does he talk like that when he writes for the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, USA Today, Christian Science Monitor?
Yeah, he does now, at least. He had a journey like all of us, and I think maybe he used to be in the minarchist camp. I'm not 100% sure, so don't quote. Don't take that with a grain of salt, I guess. But for instance, he was one of the original, quote, conservatives at the time who were against the Iraq War back in 2003. And he was in some mainstream thing where it was a bunch of quote, conservatives. I don't know how many of them were actually conservatives who were opposed to the Iraq War. And so back then, yeah, maybe he did write for something like USA Today and took a conservative line on something, or a more of a mainstream line on something. But now, man, he's plumb line as far as I can tell.
Well, speaking of those old school types, I just ordered you some stuff online. I ordered you some tubes and a – what's it called? That rack mount
power conditioner.
Power conditioner. How many rack mount things do you have now? Are you ready for a rack? You have at least two.
I've got two. That'll be three. No, my M Audio is half a rack, so I'll have three and a half rack mounted items.
You could get a rack soon.
I could get a rack. Yeah.
Or go to Iraq. I just ordered. I had a little money left over after buying that stuff from the Fiend's money for you, and I bought. A copy of a book I had before and gave away. I bought Government by Emergency by Gary North, because I really think that might be the one that is the first written example of the aggression principle as we stated it.
You're saying that because the cover obviously has a bureaucrat with a clipboard and a pencil and his bald head.
Yeah.
And behind him are two government goons with guns.
Yeah, although we did determine that maybe it was what's his name, that environmental defense guy who died a few years after that book came out, but may have said it earlier. He definitely said it. So I have to start ordering old anarchist books and reading them to find out so I can prove it.
I'm sure the old anarchist will be happy to hear that. Speaking of books, me and you are in a book that's out now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Why I Left the Left.
Yeah, I think it's called Why We Left the Left, if you're going to do a Google search for it.
It's collective.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't seen it or read it because the guy won't give a hard copy of it to people. You have to buy a Kindle one or something, or he'll give you a Kindle one. I don't know.
He'll give you a Kindle one? Well, you know, you can read Kindle on your computer for free.
I know. You know, it's kind of to the point where, like, I'm out there so much that there's a time when I would have been like, I came out in a book and bought copies for my family and been really excited about it. And now I'm like, oh, I'm in another book. Okay, well, he won't send me a copy of it. I'm not going to sign up with Kindle to download it for free.
I think you automatically are signed up if you have an Amazon account. I'm just going to shoot down your excuses here.
All right. Well, I think it still costs money. Or is he offering it free to the authors?
I hope he is. I didn't read the whole email. I'm the same way. I saw it in my email. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't like putting stuff in writing. It's like I should write a book on libertarianism. I mean, I'm an actual published author. I know how to write a book. I know what it takes to write a book. I'm really good at it. I've written like 10 published books, you know, that aren't self-published, that are published by publishers, and I make my living doing it, and I'm tired of it. I don't like writing. I can – because like – okay, like a book, you know, a 300-page book, I mean that's like 10 hours of talking. I mean we almost do that in 2 weeks without trying, you know, on the Fiends. Yeah. It's like I don't want to work that hard and – It's clunky to me writing things down.
Who has time to sit down and read a book these days?
I know. And it's like I don't want to write a book. And the other thing is like I kind of am embarrassed to go back and read that because I was more green 2 years ago when we sent our submissions into that than I am now, and I think something in it would probably embarrass me. I know there's a picture of me with a shaved head holding a badass rifle I don't have anymore. I'm holding my FAL in front of a tree. My nice. Backyard in the picture.
Is that the one with the tinfoil hat?
No, it's really serious. It's actually me as a joke posing in a really serious pose in the same pose as it's a takeoff on that doctored photo that the government made of the guy they said shot JFK. And it's not me implying I'd shoot anybody, but you know that picture of Oswald in his backyard with his Kirkano rifle holding up some communist newspaper? It was on the cover of Life. Like, it's part of the conspiracy theory is that, like, that picture is obviously faked, and it came out in the Southern Hemisphere and Europe, like, 2 hours before Kennedy was shot or something like that.
Oh, wow.
On newspapers as, you know, Kennedy was shot.
No, I wasn't aware of any of that.
That's the story.
I guess you learn.
Yeah, but it's
something new every day.
It's him in his backyard holding his rifle, but it's not even him. It's his head, like, pasted, old, you know, pre-Photoshop, pasted onto a photo by people who were good at doing that. Like, they did it
right
in a dark room, probably. But
Yeah. There was photo manipulation as early as there were photos, you know.
Well, that's why the program is called Photoshop, because it emulates a Photoshop, a place you go to have photos developed and manipulated.
Yeah, exactly. I've even heard it said, I don't remember reading any evidence or seeing any evidence to the fact, but I've heard it said that some of the earliest photos of Lincoln were manipulated to keep him from looking so ugly. He was not a pretty sight, apparently.
Well, you know the story of why he grew a beard, right? It's a true story. It involves the town I grew up in, Westfield, New York. There was this girl named Grace Bedell who was like, I don't know, 11 or 12, and she was gazing lovingly, I guess, at a photo of Lincoln by lamplight, you know, oil lamp. And it was before he had a beard, and she spilled lamp oil on the photo, and she thought it looked like a beard and it looked handsome. And she wrote him a letter and said, if you grow a beard, all the women will make their husbands vote for you. Back when women couldn't vote. And she did. She wrote it to him. He grew a beard and said that was the reason. Maybe he was planning on it anyway. And he won. And he came through, I think, while he was running. And, it, you know, he was doing a whistle stop tour on the trains and stopped in Westfield, New York, and met her. And there is now a statue in the town square where I used to smoke pot when I was a teenager of Lincoln meeting Bedell, Grace Bedell. Like, it looks kind of creepy. It's like this 6'8" brass man, I think with a beard, with a top hat, reaching out to this little girl.
Wow. That's such a – that reminds me of George Washington and the cherry tree. That's like the level of
– I know. Who knows?
Biblical type myth that it sounds like.
It's why the paper in my town is called the Westfield Republican, because Lincoln was a Republican, and that's the only thing that town is known for, other than being the birthplace of Welch's grape juice.
Right.
And Natalie Merchant.
He popularized Republicanism, i.e. the idea that massacring civilians will get you your political goals.
That sounds pretty much like a republic to me.
Yeah.
A republic, if you can keep it, ma'am.
You just might have to kill all the people that want to leave your republic.
I know, like, it would have sounded like a conspiracy theory back then if someone had said, like, the government thinks that killing 20% of the American population will advance their causes. I mean, people say that now, like Alex Jones. People say, he's nuts, but Lincoln did that.
Yeah, well, I think Alex Jones points to something of a much bigger percentage than that. Like, I forget the name of it, but isn't there the theory that the elites want to kill, like 80 or 90% of
the
human population?
Yeah.
Because the world would just work so much better with that few humans.
Yes, if Sheldon Cooper were in charge.
Right. Well, that goes to one of the flaws. Like you said, you think Sheldon Cooper is a sociopath.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't think of people as individuals, but cogs in a wheel.
He's learning, though. You know, it's the hero's journey over several seasons. It's, you know, friends become enemies, enemies become friends. Everyone's a little richer for the experience, as Stewie Griffin said once.
I don't know, maybe. I kind of feel like in that show there's very little character development.
But at least it's not the typical sitcom thing of, like, people learn big lessons each episode and then forget the lesson and have to learn it in a different situation next week.
Yeah.
Like King of the Hill or I Love Lucy.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
It's a little more advanced than that. Yeah, so Sheldon Cooper, good. Freedom Fiends on the radio coming up in 2 weeks, starting in Barstow. Good. Let's go to the market.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll show you the difference between leadership and authority and how to eliminate the demand for authority while remaining peaceful and even calm. We have a forum, and it's got gardening tips. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out CreamyRadioAudio.com. That's CreamyRadioAudio.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Nima.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
So we got a couple corrections. I said last week in my rant about the aggression principle that Carl Wattner said something in Render Not in 1989 and 1990 something. And Carl Wattner heard that and wrote me and said, I don't recall writing it. And that book came out last year, not in 99 or whatever. So.
Okay.
And so, but a lot of people asked us what OG meant. We kept saying OG libertarian in that one. It means original gangster, or as Liberty Hacksaw says, old guard when talking about politics. It basically means you've been doing it a long time and people have respect. Yeah. Yeah.
Right,
OG.
Right.
Yeah.
OG. Yeah. There's also, have you heard the term old head?
Old head? No.
Old head. Yeah. You're my old head.
That sounds kinky.
No, it's not kinky. It's
pervy.
ASAP Rocky has a song where the chorus is.
I don't know what that is.
If you listen when your old head talking, you'll be straight. Nah, it's old head. It's like it's an OG. It's another word for OG. But it's somebody if you don't have, you know, it's like a mentor. It's somebody that you go talk to.
It's an OG you know.
It's an OG you know. Yeah, and you talk to them and they tell you about that rap and trapping back in the old days. You know.
Yeah.
So you're kind of my old head.
Me?
Yeah.
Cool, man. Thanks.
Sure.
Does that make you my young head?
No, I don't think young head is a good
word. Doesn't work the other way?
No, it doesn't work.
My mentee.
Both ways. You can't universalize it. Sorry.
So I have a new article in Talkers called A $5 Ground Tester Can Save Your Life.
Yeah. And what do you mean by that, Michael? We had the discussion on the air before, didn't we?
Yeah, it's you go to the hardware store and for about between $5 and $10, you can buy a ground tester and test the grounding in your house to make sure it won't kill you. And if it will, you should call an electrician and have them fix it. And you can tell them which outlets to fix. And just read the article. I'll link it. And we had a couple comments that I didn't even think about this. We were talking about the term autarky with a CH, not a K. The K is North Korea. Autarky is another word for self-rule. And we liked it, except for the North Korea problem of this same pronounced word spelled with a K that means a closed economic system like North Korea. But I didn't even think of this, too. Another reason it's someone said they didn't like it because it sounds like autocracy, and it does, which is iron-fisted rule of one.
Because authority, is that the root it's coming from? Autocracy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So maybe that's why it never stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Stone dropped some – oh, you got some? Go ahead.
I just still think that people need to coin a new word. I guess voluntarism is pretty good, but people too often confuse it with volunteerism. People even call it volunteerism on accident. I don't know if it's on accident or if it's just
– That's building houses for Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, and that's not cool. I guess that is cool, but that's not the same thing.
Man, I've seen a lot of Bill Clinton on TV lately, like when I'm channel flipping. He's trying to sell all sorts of horrible things as a statesman for Obama.
Like the Syrian war?
Yeah, and probably like, you know, pave the way for Hillary 2016, the fourth term of George Bush.
Yeah. Well, before the most recent chemical hubbub, Bill Clinton, I think it was after the first one, you know, a year ago when there was supposedly a chemical attack, Bill Clinton came out and said that, well, if the poll numbers show that people aren't on board with military action in Syria, then it's just Obama's job to sell it better. And so I guess now he's deciding if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself.
I don't know what's more disgusting, that or if they actually said we'll go if a majority thinks so. Like that'd be a gang rape, basically. That'd be a democracy of a bunch of people saying, well, the majority of us think we should go kill them. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people on the left have pointed out that they're not opposed to military action in Syria per se as a concept. They're just opposed to it because Obama doesn't yet have the support of the UN and NATO and the international community as a whole. You know, just a few, you know, like the French are really itching to go to war. But he says you need a broader coalition for that. And I just think that that's silly. Like you said, just because more something's popular doesn't always make it right. I know it's an old saying, but it's totally true. And the root of that, obviously, is that the majority of people deciding something is right or wrong has no bearing on its actual moral rightness or wrongness.
Worms. Yep. I agree. I vote yes on what Nima said.
You vote yes? Okay.
Yes. We built the pyramids.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I don't like about the theme song is the history and mystery rhyme. I think people need to stop rhyming that. It's so annoying.
You know, my dad came up with an idea for a story series and he wanted to call it History Mysteries. And he thought that was unique. Like he doesn't really understand how to use the internet. And he thought that was brilliant. Like he's like, yes, I'm going to start writing a series for my local newspaper called History Mysteries. Isn't that a great idea? Do you think that would sell? And I'm like sitting there talking to him on the phone, kind of half listening, like searching the phrase in quotes on Google. And I'm like, 850,000 results.
Right, right. Yeah. It's my first three-syllable rhyme. That's what it sounds like. It's like baby's first three-syllable rhyme. History, mystery. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sick of it. Yeah. I say no more.
So Ben Stone came up with something much more clever today and didn't even really realize it. He wrote me and said, according to Jim Henson, he made up the phrase Muppet, the word Muppets, by combining monsters and puppets. And then Ben wrote out the math for me. Monster plus puppet equals Muppet. I guess, I don't know, okay. Maybe he forgot he had a cold. He was kind of sick. Maybe he thought he was talking to a three-year-old. But he said, so what do we call the puppets of government and puppets of statism? There has to be a cool word there somewhere that I'm overlooking. And I wrote back, yeah, I think the word is Muppet combined with the above explanation. So I want to start calling statists Muppets. Maybe not on the radio, we might get sued or something, but I like it. You like it?
Yeah, Muppets. I do too. Yeah, yeah. So Barack Obama is a Muppet.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi is a Muppet.
Yep.
Diane Feinstein is a Muppet.
You sound like a rap. You sound like that rap.
Which rap?
oh, so-and-so is a racist, George Bush is so-and-so, oh, yeah. Obama is a racist.
Yeah, Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. Lupe Fiasco,
yeah.
Of course.
So sing it, but say Muppet said. Instead of racist with the same people.
Oh, who does he talk about? Glenn Beck is a Muppet. Limbaugh is a Muppet. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't stop it. Do it like that.
Yeah, I'd rather say it about politicians than the talk radio hosts that I don't know. Right. I don't even know what those guys do. I don't listen.
Do you think Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are racist? I just think they're collectivists. I don't necessarily think they're racist.
I think Obama's racist, but I don't think Limbaugh. I think those guys are just collectivists. I actually listen to more Rush these days than, well, I've never really listened to Rush. I listen to Rush probably almost every day because when I'm calling radio stations in the morning, when they put me on hold, I hear whatever's playing on the station or whatever's playing on like their sister station and it's country or bad pop. But a lot of times I hear Talk, which is the station I'm calling if they don't own a bunch of stations, and I hear Rush because he's on for like 3 hours in the morning. So,
Wow.
I like how Larkin calls all politicians control freaks. He says that in like every interview I've heard with him, I think. And it's such an unlikely, like hippie word for him to use, but it totally fits politicians. I like that he uses it.
I like that he uses it too. And I like breaking it down into plain language like that because that's what they are, right? They get freaky. They get off on the control. It's just a vernacular way of saying libido dominante.
Those control.
Because they get off on it.
Those control freaky Muppets.
Yeah.
Control freak Muppets. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also think anytime you can take them down a peg and keep them from getting the supposed respect that you're supposed to have due for the office, because that to me is the worst concept, is when people say, well, you know, like who does this all the time? Bill O'Reilly always talks about how, well, you need to respect the office. You might not like Barack Obama, but you must respect the office of the president.
I know, I hate
and,
that.
That's the squarest thing you could ever say, is the squarest concept, well, one of the squarest concepts you could ever hold in your head.
Yeah, we're doing an interview coming up a week from this Sunday with Alex Fidel, who's a cool young cat. I don't know how old he is. He looks like 19 or 20 probably. He's in college in San Diego, and he does a libertarian radio show called Free – they all have Free in the name – Free Thought Radio. Yeah. On his college radio station, which is a 500-watt station, which is pretty beefy for a college radio station. I mean, that probably covers a lot of San Diego. Mm-hmm. And it's also syndicated on Liberty Radio Network. And we're going to have him on a week from Sunday, the first Sunday in September, to talk about some inside – I don't know if it's inside information, but he has information that's interesting. And he's an interesting cat about – he's going to be talking about how – Pelosi and them, all them Muppets, all them control freak Muppets are trying to pass a bill that'll basically make the First Amendment not apply to you unless you are an authorized stato bureaucrat journalist.
Right. Unless you make your living right now working for one of the main purveyors of propaganda, you won't have the protections of being a journalist, you know?
Yeah, those, you know, those big ones that may or may not be owned by the CIA in some way.
Yeah. So yeah, man, and we talked about that a few, I don't remember if we did it on the radio show or on the Wednesday cast, but we've talked about it before. I think Feinstein is one of the big backers or co-sponsors of the bill. It's called SB or S some number.
SB MUPP. For Muppet.
Muppet.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to be an authorized Muppet to have the – basically, it's – explain what it is with the shield law.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, basically, it's similar to lawyer-client privilege or the way psychiatrists or psychologists aren't supposed to be able or be able to be coerced into informing on their clients. Same thing with journalists and their sources. There's supposed to be a protection written in the law to where you don't have to reveal your sources or any information about them. There's a privilege there. And this prevents further chilling effect. It prevents it basically keeps the information flowing. And Obama does have a war on whistleblowers, and he does have a war on journalists and their sources. We see this with the AP scandal. You know, the feds were basically wiretapping the AP to try to find out who their sources were on a specific story because they said there was national security implications. It happened to a Fox News journalist. And I think what they're really trying to do is scare people into not talking to the press. And one of the ways they're going to do this, I think their plan is to keep certain people from being considered the press so that there would be obviously more legal ramifications for people who put information out there, both for the source and the blogger or independent journalist.
Speaking of independent journalism, this is kind of interesting. I'm looking, I just sent you another link for something that's related, which is this like request for bid from the government for someone to design a system to be able to take over all the AM and FM radio stations in an area, which is terrifying. And they don't say whether they'd want it to be used in countries where they're going to war or here or both, or try it there and then bring it here. And I was trying to think of the phrase for this. It's not a request for bid, and this is actually just a request for give us information, and then we'll have a request for a bid. It's not called an RFB. I actually looked up
I think it's RFQ, request for qualifications. Quote. Is that what it is?
Okay. I looked up RFB on Wikipedia, and there's something on Wikipedia of like when you're working for Wikipedia called requests for bureaucratship, which is the process by which the Wikipedia community decides who will become bureaucrats. Like, that's actually a phrase they picked for themselves, bureaucrats. That's just,
I guess so,
zany, man. I don't get it.
They must not have their toes in the libertarian waters flowing, bringing freedom to all. Apparently not. But yeah, it's from this thing you sent me is from fedbizops.gov, which is a government website where they do solicit companies
like
to do dirty work for
like,
the government.
You know, we need qualified companies to tell us what they would charge to make 10 million rounds of 40 cal bullets and 10 million gallons of sarin and 10 million gallons of napalm.
Yeah, and I had a job back in the day where I sat in an office and found all the public jobs going out for bid in different regions in Texas to print in a publication for contractors and subcontractors so they could get that work. So I used to be on this website all the time looking at these, and it looks like this one specifically is sources sought to provide a radio broadcast system capable of searching for and acquiring every AM and FM radio station in a specific area and then broadcasting a message in the target area on all acquired AM and FM radio station frequencies.
That's terrifying. And, you know, Sheldon Cooper would like try to map this out on a whiteboard and apply for it.
He would, yes. He would figure it out too, and then we'd all be effed.
He'd have what's the one kid who's not a doctorate, who's an actual engineer instead of a theorist?
Howard.
Yeah, Howard. Yes. He'd work with Howard on this. I don't really understand what they're looking for. Because
they already have the emergency broadcast system built into that's part of your FCC license is you have to be able to let the government do
this. It's a big fine if you don't have it working, and they can and do walk into stations all the time and say we need to see that your EAS system is working and test it.
Right.
Yeah, they do it. Mm-hmm. And but this looks like basically it's something, you know, it'd be hardware and software that would be able to find out all the stations that are broadcasting and then override them.
Right.
I don't know how that would work. I mean, I guess that they'd want to find out which ones are being broadcast to so they'd know what people are actually tuned into in an area. But I don't know my only knowledge of how to override a radio signal other than like going in with gunpoint like they do when they take over in a coup and going into the station and saying, "You will now broadcast this tape of our dear leader." Or they can do it remotely with the EAS system now. But this sounds like it's for use in countries or places where they don't have the EAS system, or maybe in case there are rebel station owners in America when Hillary takes over who don't want to get off the air and surround the generators. And, so they could do it anyway. But the only way I know of technically to do that is to have a more powerful radio signal. And it's like, how do you, in a given area, in a given city, there's like, in a big city, there's like 20 stations with 50,000 watt broadcasters that require giant antennas. I don't know how you'd make one thing that could broadcast on all those signals and override them at once.
Well, it sounds like they don't know that either. That's why they posted this.
That's why they want somebody Sheldon Cooper to figure it out for them. Yeah,
they do. If you read the synopsis, it's kind of scary too. I'll go ahead and read. The headquarters, United States Special Operations Command. Now, that's who's seeking this. Isn't that interesting?
Who
the
is
Special
that?
Operations Command. Let's look it up.
PsyOps?
It sounds like a military thing to me. Why don't you wiki that while I continue reading?
I'm afraid to.
You're afraid to. The United States Special Operations Command is seeking sources to provide a radio broadcast system capable of searching for and acquiring every AM and FM station in a specific area and then broadcasting a message or messages in the target area on all acquired AM and FM radio station frequencies. USOCOM is contemplating a foreign comparative test of a lightweight multi-frequency simultaneous over-broadcast system
Overlord pirate radio in a box, basically.
Yeah, it sounds like that's what they want. Let's see. And then the rest is just stuff about how you would get your information to them to tell them that you're qualified for this kind of a job.
Goldwater was the senator spearheading this thing at its inception, the USSOC. It's scary. It's United States Combatant Command, charged with overseeing various special operations, component commands in the Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps of the United States Armed Forces. The command is part of the Department of Defense and is the only unified combatant command legislated into being by the U.S. Congress. What? I don't even know what that means, man. I don't know. It's headquartered in...
It means they're the leaders of the special forces across all branches of the military.
So they're the people...
It means the best goons of the best goons...
Of all branches.
Take their orders from this organization that wants to take over all the radio frequencies or have the ability to take over all radio frequencies in a specific area.
They have participated in many operations from the 1989 invasion of Panama to the ongoing global war on terrorism. I'm not linking this, man. I'm not linking this request for quote.
Okay.
I saw on Fox today... And we have more like radio scariness to come up. But I saw – well, here's some more – like two more items of radio terror by governments. The guy who shot up the Navy Yard, did you hear about what he wrote on the stock of one of his weapons?
Yeah, ultra low frequency. Or he called it his ELF weapon, which stands for extreme low frequencies. He had thought – or – the news says that he was delusional and kept saying that people were trying to use frequencies, vibrations, to control his behavior and thought.
Yeah, and that sounds insane, except that we're looking at requests for quotes for things to take over all the radio, and the Navy uses ELFs in submarine-to-submarine communications. But it is a conspiracy theory that – ELFs are used to do mind control on people. But would you be surprised from organizations that are doing requests for quotes on how to take over all the radios in a given region?
See, nothing the government – none of the stuff would
surprise me. Any government. Say – not the government. I really want to start – I had a note. I'll just do some insider baseball with you here. I was going to – had a note to tell you another. I want to start always saying any instead of the government. I want to say any government anywhere throughout history, and like have that be a thing, or say just any government or governments.
We'll just say any government, yeah, or governments.
Yeah,
well, governments is probably better. We'll pluralize it. How's that?
Yeah,
we'll collectivize it.
I'll stress it. I'll stress it too throughout history when I think too. I don't have a problem with repeating ourselves. I think that's an important point to make.
I do. So, yeah. See, here's the problem with conspiracy theories.
Especially since coming up – well, I'll tell you later. I'll type it to you.
I think the problem is people always think, oh, who would do that? They would never do that. My son or my daughter or my uncle is in the Army and he wouldn't do a mean thing like that. And I think that's the problem because I don't put anything past – governments or any government in history, because their only motive, their only goal is furthering their strength and control, and they don't care what means or who they kill to achieve that goal or that end.
So I just sent you something in unbreakable encryption. Read it and tell me what you think of it. Is it cool?
Yes. I think that's cool. Yeah, I think that's very totally cool.
Yep. So moving on, there's a thing coming up where the governments are asking a bunch of, like, all the ham radio operators in America to participate in this test in mid-November on a certain day. Let me see when it is. I can't find it, but it's basically like November 16th, 14th, something around there. They're going to like simulate how ham radio operators would work with emergency personnel if all the power grids went down. Now, in LibPair, I mean, ham radio operators would help emergency people, you know, connect when things were down. But the thing is, like, ham radio wouldn't be a special class of people with a government license. It'd be anybody with an interest in it, and there'd be ways to figure it out so not everyone steps on everyone's frequency. But the government has been in the, like, tried to be in the pockets with ham operators since ham radio existed.
Mm-hmm.
And they often do things like, you know, give them special equipment during emergencies, or like deputize them to be the radio command post at the high school where they're having the first aid evacuation. And then they have them in the newspaper for a press op, a photo op, and they get to like share it with their ham radio buddies. And it's cool that ham radio operators do that. But what I really think is the governments around the world are trying to like get in good with people who have equipment and knowledge to transmit in a situation where everything else would be down. Like, basically, the government could turn off the power, they could turn off the internet, or it could go down on its own, or a terrorist could take it down, to where like the only communication that citizens would have would be ham radios, to where they could talk further than down the street, you know. And right, they don't really like that being uncontrolled, you know.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. The main thing, because I think that's further evidence to the fact that this is an info war, to co-opt Alex Jones there.
Yes.
But it also is evidence to the fact that the state is something in the mind. It's a mindset. And so in a situation where, you know, they call it preservation of the government or whatever, in some kind of mass emergency, but it's really preservation of the state and making sure that they're still able to get their propaganda out, you know, in the event that people are not tuned in to the normal means of propaganda, i.e. TV, cable, all those sources. So I totally think that the government would love to be able to control all communications at all times. You know, they would love to have a pipeline directly to your brain to get you to follow whatever their bidding is at any given time.
Well, all of the governments everywhere. I mean, when there's a military coup, that's the first thing they take over, you know, is the radio and TV stations and newspapers. Mm-hmm. And that's a little harder with the internet, but they could, if they shut down the power, that's pretty much the only way they could really shut down the internet in a way that most people – I mean, there are people who have, you know, their own like nested web. You know, there's ways to do the internet without the government. Like, you can have everybody in a region have wireless routers with a certain Linux applet uploaded to it. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can do what is it called? Mesh computing, you know, where as long as one of them –
Mesh networking, I think.
Yeah. I mean, but – who has that in my town? Probably nobody, you know.
right, yeah.
Yeah, and you'd need a generator.
Right.
And you'd need the internet to be on somewhere for it to be connected to, and it would be incredibly slow.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like that episode of South Park where the internet's down, and so they all flock to California, Grapes of Wrath style, because there's a tiny bit of internet left in California.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
You haven't seen that one?
No.
It's pretty great.
I suppose you know what Grapes of Wrath is.
Oh, I love the Grapes
of Wrath.
That's
like my dad's era.
Ah, it's a great book, though. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. And I don't think, you know, people say Steinbeck was a communist and stuff like that, but I didn't feel any praise of central government control of the economy in Grape's Wrath. You know, it was talking about the horrors of the government plowing down people's crops and destroying food while people were going hungry, you know, to manipulate the markets.
I used to describe the guitar player in my band Baby Opaque as looking like the defeated preacher in Grapes of Wrath. You know, he was like 6'6" and emaciated, kind of looking skinny, cool. That was played by Henry Fonda, wasn't it? Or not? He wasn't the preacher.
I don't know if I ever saw the movie. I did hear somebody reference the movie recently on some Liberty radio or podcast. I can't remember what it was. But they were talking about the Grapes of Wrath as an example of the diffusion of responsibility. And we've talked about this before, like when I couldn't get my car inspection passed because of a tiny piece of plastic that I needed that was required.
The lady
and it
parts.
Was a big – the lady parts of my seatbelt were uncovered, and I needed to get a plastic cover for them. And I remember – I think the way I put it was, there's nobody's ass I can kick for all the headache that I have to go through for this.
Yeah.
And he brought up that point with regard to Grapes of Wrath. Like, people were getting their farms foreclosed on, and in the movie, one of the farmers is like, well, who do I go talk to? You know, the banker's the one who called the shot, and he calls the banker, and the banker's like, well, I answer to this person, and he answers to this person, and they answer to that person, and there's no one person who's responsible. There's nobody you can talk to fix it.
I was thinking about a couple things like that the other day, about how there's you know, like, all you can do is, like, go up to a giant skyscraper and kick the first brick on the ground and then walk away, you know?
right. That's the futility of it.
Yeah. Like, one thing I was thinking of, okay, we're ordering pizza the other day and, like, the tax is included. And I'm like, you know, there's no way to, like, not that I'm a tax protester, but if I were, there's no way to order a pizza online and not pay the tax, you know? Like, you could technically, in a supermarket, like, put down the money for your groceries, accept the tax, and then run out. I mean,
they run away.
You'd be stealing, but you can't do that. Everything is just included and it's invisible. And I was also thinking about, like, regulations, like, you know, like mowing your lawn or something like that. And I was basically thinking, like, people don't see it. Like, they're like, oh, you have to mow your lawn or you'll get a ticket, you know, in some towns. Basically, what that means, okay, like, if you walked into someone's yard and held a gun to their head and said, you will toil for me now, but on your own property, they'd think you were fucking nuts. But that's what it is. And it's not now. Mm-hmm. It's either today or tomorrow or the next day before they give you a ticket. But it basically is some bureaucrat telling you at gunpoint to do work on your own property. You know, that's what building codes are. That's what that kind of codes are. All of it.
All of it, yeah. Well, I also heard somebody bring up the point that if you conceive of your tax burden as only 20%, which that's a really conservative estimate, but if you considered it only 20% and you work 5 days a week, then on Friday, you're a slave. You're nothing but a slave. All of that work you did on Friday, you're not getting paid for none of it. So there.
It's actually closer to like 45 or 50 if you factor in the tax on the tax on the tax of everything. And some would say
sales tax gas taxes. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, what food would cost if they weren't taxing the trucker's gas to bring it to you. And it was private roads, which would be cheaper per mile to use and better, blah, blah, blah. But actually it could be as high as like 99% tax if you take the, 95% tax, because wasn't it, L. Neil Smith calculated that without the government, we'd all be 8 times richer, and he had some kind of math for it. But so what would that be? What percent? I don't know. I'm bad with math.
I don't remember the exact math. I just remember his fictionalization of it in Probability Broach, where, the counter character, you know, from our time is asking his I guess counterpart in the fictional universe, the parallel universe where George Washington got killed in the Whiskey Rebellion and freedom reigned instead of tyranny. Yeah. Yeah. And he's asking him, you know, how do you do so well? You know, how is this meal that we're eating so cheap? How is this cigar that I'm smoking only 10 cents? You know, what about the poor people here? And he's like, I am one of the poor people here. You know, that's not a mansion. That's just an average house. Yeah. This isn't a fancy meal. This is just what meals are like here.
Yeah. So, speaking of alternate universes, let's get back to Sheldon Cooper for a second before we go to the market. Another thing that I like about Sheldon Cooper is at one point he decides that he wants to live forever and he's going to die of natural causes 10 years too early to be made into a robot and join the singularity, which is interesting. Ah. That's a Kurzweil contraption, Kurzweil idea. And I actually heard Kurzweil lecture once at the university in Pasadena, which is where they live. But he decides that it's too dangerous to go outside, so he creates a robot with a telescreen on it, and that becomes his virtual avatar for the world to interface with the world. And they're like, "Where are you? Where are you?" And he's like, "I can't tell you." And they're like, "I'm going to find you. Are you in your bedroom?" And he says, "No, I'm broadcasting from a secure and undisclosed location," which I say every week, basically. That's going to be my new thing. I want to say it at least once on the radio. Broadcasting from a secure and undisclosed location.
I thought you'd do that already.
No, I say from a broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America in Wyoming.
I see. You're going to lessen that mouthful. Okay. Yeah, I'm on board for that.
Here, let me play this before we go to the market. Let me play this this radio. God, I'm just hi, I want to be on radio. I want to play this this promo that I made today. KD, let's see. KD, because it has an update in it. Yeah, promos. Here we go. Kassizzle. They used to be called Kassizzle. I was like, is it Kassizzle? They're like, no, used to be awesome. Called that when we're country music and talk, but now
it's Kassizzle when they were country?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Not
Freedom Beans with Nima V and Michael Dean.
Not your grandpa's talk radio.
The Freedom Fiends, armed and peaceful, as it should be.
Listen soon before they get droned.
The Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location.
The Freedom Fiends, every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1230 KSCL in Barstow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's the other one. Oop. DJ one.
Okay.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends on AM 1230 KSCL in Barstow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Reverby goodness.
Reverby squintiny goodness. Yeah. So we're going to go to the market and then come back for the third of three. All right?
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Want to contribute to liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down. Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com.
You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Rolling. So Nima.
Yeah.
Does your wife like that show, the Sheldon Cooper show?
Yeah, in fact, she's the one who likes it more than me. She used to require it before bedding.
Before sex?
Went to bed. No.
That'd be sleep. Weird. I mean, that wouldn't be sleep weird. Bedding. Just that'd be kind of. I actually had my last girlfriend before DJ. I'm still friends with her. She kind of married Sheldon Cooper or someone much like him.
Hmm. Why?
Did I talk about that on the show? I think I told you off show. Because right?
She didn't want to be bugged for sex constantly.
No, she. Well, I don't want to talk about their sex life. That they had a healthy, normal life in that sense, I think. But not that it's okay. Not that it's abnormal or unhealthy to be asexual. Like some, you know, small percentage of people are. They just
right.
Which doesn't mean they're celibate. Like
they, hey, there's more for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But she married a guy who was like a string, you know, research facility employed, string theory, theoretical mathematician, physicist, who had done a summer of research at the North Pole. I think they go to the South Pole in Big Bang Theory. No,
I think you have it backwards.
I have it backwards.
You said they,
okay.
they were in the South Pole, but
he went to
Sheldon
the North Pole.
Cooper went to the North Pole. Yeah.
Okay. He went to the South Pole then. Yeah, he went to the other one. Yeah, I was watching a documentary the other day. But anyway, the guy was like, I met him a couple times. He was really nice, but he was really like, I don't know. He kind of reminded me of Sheldon Cooper now that I know the majesty of Sheldon Cooper.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
The majesty, is that what you're
and
saying?
And I guess she was a fan of it too, like, or maybe it hadn't started. Yeah, because she used to call Charlie, my cat, friend Charlie, and Sheldon calls people like friend Leonard. You know, it's really weird. Like, wow, okay.
Yeah. That is weird and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think Sheldon Cooper is emulatable.
I don't think
in
he really
a positive
is either.
Light. No.
Yeah, sorry. It's kind of brilliant acting. It's a good
that's
job.
That's true. I will concur.
He's what
that.
You call a breakout character, like the guy who wasn't supposed to be the star but ended up being the star, kind of like Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec. He's the breakout
yeah.
character.
Yeah. Are new episodes of that coming out?
I don't know. Huh. I don't know. Let's talk about Barack Obama, how he allegedly has 19 million online fans that don't really exist. You sent me this.
Yeah. Fake Twitters. Fake tweeters? What do you call that?
Twats.
There? Fake twats. Okay, that's our story and we're sticking to it. Yeah, that was an article from the Daily Mail. Apparently they did a study on public figures, politicians, and their Twitter accounts. And the story was about how a big portion of them for Obama, Biden, Michelle, is it Michelle Obama? That's his wife's name, right?
Michelle O'Bachman, yeah.
Michelle O'Bachman. Yeah, they got a bunch of fake twats in their harems.
Like millions, like most of them, like half of them or something.
I think it was like 40% or something. So almost. It was a plurality, I would expect.
What's a plurality?
Not,
what's that? Define that for people that don't know.
Well, it's not a plurality. A plurality is more of that than anything else. Like you don't have a majority. Like if it was 40%, 20%, 20%, and 20%, the 40% would be the plurality.
Okay, and what's a supermajority?
Supermajority, I think they usually
two-thirds,
it's
right?
It's two-thirds, yeah. 66. Yeah,
I think. I think in Congress it's two-thirds, but I think in different situations it can be different amounts.
People define it in different amounts, yeah.
But it's more than 51%. It's like you have to have a certain amount. Ian Freeman right. uses that word a lot for people that are stupid and statists and want this,
a super majority of statists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. So I had some problems with your source on this. Let's talk about that a little bit.
You don't like things that come from the Daily Mail. I actually got to this from Lou Rockwell, and he posts a lot of stuff from the Daily Mail. And I contend he that also the Daily Mail
– he also takes ads. I don't want to bash him, but he has a lot of ads that are like, this may save you money. And you click, you know, like this weird trick helps you lose weight, or this weird trick.
Those are Google AdSense ads, though.
They're tailored to his audience. They're like the cheap energy trick the power company doesn't want you to see, and you know the plan for the find out what to, the 12 things to stockpile in the coming apocalypse other than guns, gold, water, and food. You know,
well, Google AdSense is getting smarter, but still it's not smart enough to realize that there's a thing called ANCAPs, and they require very specific ads. because I used to go to lourockwell.com, and you'd get do you agree with Barack Obama's plan for such and such? Click here to sign the petition.
Well, that's because they're bashing Obama all the time, and the computer just goes, oh, they exactly. like Obama. Right. They're talking right. about so, Obama.
So I don't begrudge Lou Rockwell trying to fund his operations through Google AdSense. I think we all look at those, and those become the noise that our eyes just
I don't see
ignore.
Them. Yeah, I'm fine with it. That's the ANCAP way. Advertise shit, and if people don't want shit, they don't buy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, they advertise perpetual motion machines on there. I'm like, come on, man. That doesn't exist. Sheldon Cooper would tell you why.
Right.
Your source was the Daily Mail, which is the London newspaper that I know from being in London and seeing idiots reading it. And also from the Hubert Selby movie when we interviewed his first publishers in England who – fought basically a freedom of speech lawsuit against the government of Britain, of England in 1966 or something. I mean, talking old OG, you know, freedom fighters for liberty, for free speech. You know, like this book talks about down and out people in Brooklyn screwing and tattooing and doing drugs and cussing. And the Queen, the Crown, didn't like it. And they raided bookstores that sold it. And we interviewed his two public one was the bookseller, the other was the publisher. And it's great because the whole movie is like, you know, guys from Brooklyn saying like, yeah, a couple of dancers going back and forth from Moscow to New York. And then it's like there's this 8-minute section in the middle called The Trial. And it's like it suddenly sounds like NPR. It's like there's classical music playing and so we triumphed in the trial, and so it was, and we went on to publish more books. And it's like masterpiece theater all of a sudden. And then it goes back to like, Harry stole his mother's television set again. You know, I mean, like junkie talk from Brooklyn. I really love that section of the movie, the interviews of those two guys. The one of them's died since then, but they talk about the trial and they say, you know, there were like however many people are on a jury in England, like 10 or whatever it is. And he's six. I don't know. And he's like, the jury was forced to read the book by the court, and they would send word. They would send questions out like, what does this word mean? What does that word mean? Because they didn't understand the Brooklynese. And finally, you know, it took him 3 days to decide. And he said, you can tell a lot by jurors by what they're reading. And most of them were carrying the Daily Mail, and there was one guy who was carrying the Mirror, and you know he may have held them up for a few, like basically saying like the smarter guy made them debate instead of just saying guilty, you know, and they came back not guilty or whatever. And it, you know, that was my first impression of it was like, oh, it must be like the equivalent of the New York Post. And it is. And so, but then you said something, I said, man, your source here is the Daily Mail. They're a tabloid. And what did you say?
I said it's a few steps above a tabloid. It's more like the New York Post than the National Enquirer, which I still maintain. The Daily Mail is closer to the New York Post than it is to the National Enquirer.
Yeah, and I said, I mean, National Enquirer has like, I had Elvis and Bigfoot's baby as the headline, but the New York Post, and I've been to New York a lot, and I've seen the people who read the New York Post, and they're basically like, You know, they remind me of the people that are in Law and Order that when the murder police come to interview them, they're too busy, like, stacking crabs on a dock to talk to the murder police. Which isn't saying that, you know.
It's more of an honest job than being the police in SVU.
Yeah, it is. You're right. I'm not denigrating manual labor, but that's kind of a cliche in Law and Order is the guy doing his job who's too busy to talk to the murder police, as some comedian said. So, but I wanted to point out that saying the New York Post is less of a tabloid than National Enquirer is kind of like, oh, I don't know, Obama's better than Hillary, maybe. and I looked at the New York Post, and their banner headline today is about basically saying a rap beef has ended. It says,
but it's a real thing, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Brown and Drake did bury the hatchet. You know, it's not Elvis and Bigfoot gangbang me, and I'm having their.
Their love child, baby. but they kind of. Oh, Sheldon Cooper also says the word hippie in a derogatory way, which I kind of do sometimes too. But I kind of like hippies too. But
I looked at
they sensationalize real things, like when General Petraeus affair came out. The headline was "Cloak and Shag Her."
Come on, that's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
You got props for that.
In LibPair, that's how all the real news would be. But
I think so.
And then there was the best one was Osama bin Wanken, and the subheading was pornography discovered in Osama bin Laden's lair after they murdered him. And there's a photo. There's a photo.
Oh, this is the best part.
You know, there's a famous photo of Osama looking old and tired, watching TV in his bunker, his windowless bunker. And they photoshopped on the TV he's watching, Debbie Does Abadabad. And
I'm like, hilarious.
I said, after that, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that the New York Post is a reputable news source.
Well, here's the thing is it's more similar to the way blogs work, right? I mean, blogs still have real stuff, but they throw in their own opinions and a funny quip here and there. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. So what else we got? So,
I think that's okay. And it doesn't surprise me that Barack Obama has a large number of fake twats following him on Twitter.
I believe it. Also, though, the tool that they use to determine that. And the Daily Mail source was the Daily Mail, and their research tool is a website tool, you know, app called statuspeople.com, which doesn't even have a Wikipedia entry on it, which doesn't mean it's not real. I no longer have a Wikipedia entry on me, but.
And you're real, I think.
I am. But I'm looking at their site, and it says, the social media marketing platform for your business. And I'm like, really? How can this reach into someone else's Twitter account and know what percentage are real?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I buy it. But I do buy.
But that would be the type of company to do it, right, is somebody whose job it is to figure out for businesses if people selling ad space are lying about their ad stats or their followers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's LibPair compliant.
Yeah.
I don't know. And we've talked on and on about how the Obama administration tries to co-opt social media to put forth their propaganda. And something like saying, oh, well, listen to me. I've got 40 million Twitter followers, or I've got 50 million Twitter followers. Don't you want to follow me too?
Yeah. I agree 100%.
You just want to make fun of the Daily Mail and New York Post.
Yeah, and I forgot the greatest New York Post headline of all time. It was about an actual murder, and the headline was "Headless Body in Topless Bar."
See, that could be in a real newspaper, though. I could see a real local newspaper putting that as the headline, no pun intended. Because if there was somebody decapitated in a topless bar, those are facts. Facts is facts. I mean, why can't you want your headline to be grabbing?
And I could see Jay Leno making fun of it too in his in his routine.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely done that.
No, Jay Leno. That's a 30 Rock thing. No, the guy does that. like Josh does a dead on Jay Leno, and they're like, no, Jay Leno. Have you ever seen The Tonight Show?
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
So here's one. Mark Steven just wrote an article in National Review. It's called America, the Banana Republic. And I'm like, didn't the Fiends just do a whole episode on that a week ago? Are we source material for ideas for National Review?
Barack Obama also said it in a recent speech, didn't he? Or so, it was either him after or some other.
After we said it.
I think so. Let's Google it, because I was pretty sure it was either him or some other high-up stooge who said, America's not a banana republic. We don't walk out on our debts. No, it was. It was Barack Obama. He was talking about the debt ceiling, and he was saying, we're America. We're not some banana republic. We don't walk out on our debts. And this was all him trying to get them to raise the debt ceiling.
Wow.
So think about the non sequitur there, the leap of logic there that it absolutely makes no sense. You're saying, well, we can't pay our debts, but we're not the kind of people who don't pay our debts. So just give us some more credit. How about we increase the debt? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Wow. Well, the articles about him saying that are from 5 days ago. I don't know when he said it. Can you find that?
Let's
AmericanThinker.com. Obama calls Congress banana republic. It seems like it's all from 5 days ago. All the news articles about it.
When did we do our thing about banana? It was 2 weeks ago.
We did it two weeks ago. So I guess we are a source material for Barack Obama.
Because
yeah. We said it on. I'm looking at.
We did a whole show on banana republic.
Yeah, September 11th. It was September. Was it?
It was a radio show. It was a radio show. It wasn't a Wednesday cast, I don't think.
Okay.
So I think it was either the 8th or the 7th of September. So
September 8th.
Suck on that banana.
It was September
Barack.
8th, man. Yep.
Yeah.
So somebody at the White House is using us for source material. Let's see. Let's put these guys have their finger on the pulse.
Yes.
I'm not insane to the point where I'm like, yes, that absolutely came from us, but I'd consider it a possibility. I mean, they watch the internet. They listen to radio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's also the diffusion of ideas. And I don't know. I don't think we're the first people to point out that America, if it's not already similar to a banana republic, it's headed that way.
No, but we're the first people this month.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
To do it in public.
Ah, I see. I did like about that whole discussion that we came up with on the fly that if America is a banana republic, then it's because a banana republic includes having an economy based on one main export. And if you were to put that on America, yes, it would be military tyranny.
Yeah. Coming soon to a radio station near you, courtesy of this request for quote. Right. Yeah. You know, Tom Woods posted that he's looking for audio help with his show.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. And he's willing to pay someone to help. And like 25 people have sent me that. And I'm like, no, man, he's got to write me. I'm not writing him.
Well, it was an open request he put out.
Yeah,
it was
but
like
I like
the Fed business ops.
I like that like 25 people have written me and sent me that. Like I'm the guy in Liberty. But apparently Tom Woods doesn't know that. He hasn't contacted
me. What he wants is to be able to figure out a way to
take phone calls, take Skype, record Skype.
Well, yeah, to take his guests and his callers and have their audio quality be okay. But I think he's recording the show. He's not going to do it live. So his worry was syncing the two audio files after the fact. And it seems like that's real easy. That's not that hard, is it? You just make sure they're the same sample rate. And
we did that for 2 years.
Yeah. Not that difficult of a thing.
Yeah, we took phone calls on our streaming show, and they sounded as good as the person sounded on their end. You know, if they were using Skype and a good mic. I mean, remember that one time we were like, wow, what mic are you using?
And
he was using a $17 mic. But
and then we went and bought those $17 mics.
The problem,
they sounded good for $17.
The problem with taking phone calls on a show, and this is like my final thing on it, is it's – you can do it on your end pretty good. It's not that hard. I could tell someone how to do it, but it really depends on what the other person's using. And it's like, you have to be kind of persnickety with people. You have to say, okay, I'm doing an interview. Do you have a landline instead of a cell phone? They're like, yeah, but I don't even know the number. And I'm like, find the number, get a phone, get a landline, go buy one for $10. You know, like a lot of people have a landline, but don't have a landline phone, you know? And I'm like,
buy one at the dollar store.
Yeah. Go to Salvation Army and buy one for $3. Cell phones sound like ass. Landline sound okay. Skype sound with a good mic sounds way better than either.
Yep.
I mean, I'm looking for the day, which isn't far away, when all cell phones sound really good. It doesn't. It could be now, but it's not a priority for people. So the market hasn't made it happen yet.
I guess you're right. And we wouldn't have anything really to add to Tom Wood's conversation. He's settled on he's going to use Skype. You know, the only thing we could offer above that is use Mumble or use something else, Audio Compass that we use. But doesn't work because that requires your guests to have Mumble,
right,
or to have Audio Compass. So something like Skype, which is free that everybody can get, that's really the best you could hope for. And just hope that Skype's audio quality gets better than it is.
And, you know, I've kind of spent so much energy trying to improve the audio of other people's shows. And I've written to Tom Woods about something at one point. He never fucking wrote me back. And it's like, you know, I'm worried about our show. I'm not worried. I mean, I care about our show. I don't care about other people's shows. If they ask me and they're sincere, I'd probably help them for free. But I'm not going to answer his call and say, yes, hire me, please, instead of other people. It's like, fuck that, man. I'm not going to do that.
My suggestion is if you're pre-recording it, then don't sweat it so much. Learn a few editing tricks. Learn how to sweeten the audio. That's a big thing, and it's not that hard to do. Watch some YouTube videos about how to use compression and EQ. Put your EQ before the compression and sweeten it if it doesn't sound so great. Learn some basic audio techniques. That would be my – and Tom Woods is a real smart guy. I know he doesn't have a lot of time, but he could probably hire or get some volunteers to do it. People love Tom Woods. You know, outsource that to one of your – fellow audiophiles, because there were tons of people in the comment section that would like, I'd be willing to help you out. Ask them if they'll help out with editing in or sweetening his audio.
There you go. The only person I've tried to help a lot of people, and most people are like, who are you? Go away. And then their show pod fades because it sounds like shit. The only person I've actually helped other than us is Ben Stone. He has immensely improved his audio since I met him and helped him out.
Yeah. And it's because he's awesome.
Yep. So I am the decider. That's my final thing I'm going to say today.
Are you the decider? Like a George Bush kind of decider?
Yeah. The thing. I actually helped that station that we're getting on coming up in Barstow. I helped them pick out their whole weekend slate, like 12-hour Saturday, 12-hour Sunday. So I got to go through the GCN. You know, they have 6 channels playing at any given time. And I got to pick out the shows that I thought would work for him, that I thought were good, that have good audio quality. And I picked the lineup for that station. And I've actually listened to that station. You can, when you're driving from LA to Vegas, you can hear that station for an hour. It's the only, there's that and there's a Spanish music station. If you don't like Spanish music, it's that's the station you listen to. So I've driven that 50 times, that, you know, back and forth between LA and Vegas while traveling and going elsewhere in the country. And it's I've always disliked the radio on the desert in America, in the middle of nowhere. You say it's either Tejas or Jesus. Well,
yep.
I got to actually –
it's either Jesus or Jesus is the way I
put
it.
Yeah. I got to actually improve that. I got to actually decide – you know, someone asked my advice and I got to pick the slate of shows that are going to be on.
The third way. That's what we call ourselves. Yeah. The third way. Jesus, Jesus, or Fiends.
Yep.
You decide.
And Fiends and Free Talk Live and Alex Jones and then a bunch of non-political stuff. I picked Car Talk and Flow of Wisdom and What You Got, which is an antique show. And, you know, it's kind of fun. And I worked real hard on it. And I'm the decider.
Kudos to you and thank you, because that, you know, that's the kind of area where you deciding what's on the radio or helping to decide what's on the radio for the whole weekend. I mean, that's going to be people driving to Vegas.
In a giant geographic area,
LA.
You know, 100-mile radio, 100-odd-mile diameter circle, basically, of radio. Yeah, and that's –
so you go to either government-modified environment, either Vegas or L.A., and you're trying to figure out why you have this sense of malaise and that something is wrong with these two places.
And you say,
then you hear the Fiends,
like Moses, I will go to the desert and find answers. And you drive to Barstow and you turn on the radio. You're like, I'm bored. This is the desert. I'm bored. I'm bored. And you turn on the radio and you're like – Barstow, I will stay here and build my empire. Build my lib pair.
Yes.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's I've always wanted to do that, pick all the shows for that drive for a weekend. I just didn't know it until I did it. I was like, I've driven on that so many times with so many different people, with bands, with my wife, with different girls back in the day, all sorts of people on my own, and like driven through that 100-mile stretch of nothing and then Barstow and then nothing between Vegas and LA. And like, I hate the radio in that stretch, and now I would love the radio in that stretch. And I got to be the decider.
Yes. And speaking of Lib Pair, but not in Barstow, I'd like to send a ping back to Davi Barker. He mentioned Lib Pair in a recent interview with Ben Stone in reference to you.
Oh,
he was trying to find a word. He was like, I don't know, what would you call it? I guess like the Lib Pair, like Michael Dean says.
Cool. What's his thing, Hoodies for the Homeless? We were supposed to mention that. What's
Hoodies
the website for that?
Hoodies for the Homeless. Yeah. I think you can go to Bitcoins Not Bombs, and they've got their hands on a grip of orange hoodies that somebody was pretty much giving away at a very low cost. And so they're going to buy them all up and distribute them to homeless people. So you'll see homeless people wearing Bitcoin paraphernalia in San Francisco.
And what was your comment on that?
Because we want homelessness and Bitcoin to be associated with each other.
Well, I have a story about that real quick. Was when I played my band Bomb, you know, we used to make our own t-shirts and sell them. We had silk screening stuff, and you know, we'd make up like 40 for each show or something, and then like hundreds when we're on tour, and we had someone that would make them while we're on tour and send us more when we ran out, like send them to the next stop or whatever, to Barstow, and we'd pick them up. And one time we played at the I-Beam in San Francisco. We played with Skin Yard, which is Daniel, God, what's his name? It's the guy that the engineer for CZ Records, or our friend that engineered the Nirvana record and all the stuff for Sub Pop.
Oh yeah, and I was reading about him recently. Your failure to come up with his name is contributing to my
Jack
failures.
Andino. It was Jack Andino's band.
Jack
I think.
Andino.
Yeah,
there
Jack
was another Andino. Guy that did In Utero too. I can't think of his name.
Oh no, that's someone else. In Utero. No, that was the guy that's on the DVD extras of the DIY or Die movie.
Yeah,
the guy from Rape Man and Big Black, Steve Albini.
Steve Albini, that's who I was trying to think of. Yeah, but you're not talking about him. You're talking about Jack Endino.
Yeah,
produced their stuff when they like for Bleach when they were on Sub Pop. Okay.
Yeah.
Grimier. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Endino was in that band with Daniel House, who ran CZ Records, and Matt Cameron, who was later in what's the band that did Black Hole Sun? You know,
Soundgarden.
Yeah, it was like
it
was like the reverse of a supergroup. Like a supergroup is when a bunch of famous people get together from other bands and then start a new band. But this was the opposite. It was a band that like not a lot of people heard that everyone went on to become famous, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And Skin Yard opened up for Bomb. It was like kind of at the height of our, like, you know, just packing out 500 seat clubs. Yeah. And I think that was the show where I got filleted, blown on stage by a girl and probably a guy. Huh. Maybe a guy. I don't know. But we had like all these Bomb t-shirts. We had them in grocery bags, and we sold a bunch of them. And then we had like two grocery bags left over. It was a big show, so we made like, you know, 100 shirts or something. We sold like 80 of them, and we had like 20 left over in two grocery bags. And I walked out of that show with like, you know, $1,000 cash in my pocket, some drugs, and like a girl under each arm. And I didn't want to load equipment, so I slipped the roadie an extra 20 and said, take my share of loading stuff. And the other guys in the band did the same thing, and the roadie ended up moving everything, and the cops were chasing him off because he was double parked, and he forgot two bags of t-shirts. And a week later, being the soup kitchen celebrity that I was broke again and eating at the soup kitchen up the street at the John Coltrane Church, which was the weird, freaky jazz church up the street on Divisadero from me.
Cool.
And, yeah, it was that's a whole nother story, that church. But, I went in and like, I went in the soup kitchen and there were like 20 grimy homeless people wearing brand new white, shiny Bomb t-shirts. And I was like, where'd you get the shirt? And he's like, oh, some guy was passing them out. So it is good to associate your product and or service with homeless people. Yeah, I think it's good.
Well, we kind of laughed at it, but Davi explained it really well in his interview with Ben Stone. So you should go check that out for more on that. But
yeah.
Basically the concept that Bitcoin could actually be a really good resource for the homeless to start building their wealth back up.
They could use it on their Obama phones.
Bitcoin.
They could use it on their Obama phones.
Well, that's the other thing is people are developing Bitcoin apps or Bitcoin technology that could be used on dumb phones. So the free phone, the free little Nokia you can get from your Obama phone.
You'd call a phone number and you'd press numbers in.
It's text-based. Yeah. You send somebody a text message and it transfers Bitcoin to them. I guess that's the awesome concept. And so homeless people will be less likely to be jacked for their money if their money's in Bitcoin.
Someone could beat you up and make you type the thing in, but that's harder.
I guess
than,
they could.
It's kind of like
a lot harder than grabbing.
There's a Simpsons, an old Simpsons, where they go to a cyber cafe and Snake, the criminal that's always robbing people in the Simpsons, runs in with a gun and robs everyone in the cyber cafe. And he doesn't take money. He like puts a floppy disk in their computer and downloads their money. Like their cyber money. This is before Bitcoin. Okay. It's funny.
Right, right.
So I got one last thing. Bitcoin, not bombs. My band Bomb had a slogan. It was money for bomb, not for bombs. Like money for our band, not for bombs. And I painted that on the ceiling of the kitchen of Dave from the band MDC, Millions of Dead Cops. And it stayed up there for years. And he thought it was really funny. He just let me paint it on his ceiling. And they are the band who wrote the song Soup Kitchen Celebrity, which was about being in a punk rock band that toured and everyone thought you were great and you sold lots of records and then you came home and went to the soup kitchen.
There you go.
Yep.
But you didn't stand in the welfare line.
No, man. No. All right. Worms.
Worms.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. That includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends, make copies, email it to everyone you know, go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.